Today's program was brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm in Vermont, a producer of award-winning handmade cheese from goat and cow milk. For more information, visit ConsiderBardwellFarm.com.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd, live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. Summertime is a busy time for those of us working in cheese. While we cheesemongers aren't selling as much as we will come November and December, now's the time we prepare for the busy holiday season. We visit cheesemakers and participate in trade shows and cheese festivals. We attend the Cheesemonger Invitational and the annual American Cheese Society Conference. It's been exactly a month since the Cheesemonger Invitational here in New York. That weekend turned out to be so much more than an epic cheese battle between mongers from around the country. It was a chance to hang out with cheesemongers and cheesemakers alike and to celebrate cheese in this awesome community we're all part of. In honor of the American Cheese Society Conference, which begins tomorrow in Sacramento, I thought it'd be great to go back to some interviews I conducted along with Sophie Schlesinger and Andrew Siskind, weekend of the Invitational. These interviews feature some well-known folks in our artisan American cheese community. First off, we got an interview with Adam Smith, former Cheesemonger Invitational winner and current quality control manager for the Cellars Jasper Hill in Vermont. Adam's worked on both the retail and production side of cheese and gave us some great insight on the intersection between cheese and everyday life.
All right, we're here at the Cheesemonger Invitational. This is Sophie. I'm with Andrew Siskind and Greg Blaze reporting for Cutting the Curd, and we are joined by Adam Smith of Jasper Hill. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yep.
And we're talking to Adam today because he's actually a former winner of the Cheesemonger Invitational 2 years ago in 2012, and he's back, this time with Jasper Hill, who is a big supporter and sponsor of this event. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your life post-win. What happened? What's changed? I feel like it's been a whirlwind.
Well, yeah. So that was in June 2012. In August, I left Cowgirl Creamery because I was in D.C. Managing the shop there. It was awesome, but it was one of those things, like, you knew that it was time to take the next step, move on, do something else. So I knew folks up at Jasper Hill, and honestly, like, one of the things that really fascinates me about cheese is that you can learn about one singular subject, but while doing so, touch on so many other topics, right? And in college, I was an interdisciplinary studies major, which they called the football players major.
I was going to say, isn't that like golf and like a basketball?
It was literally
cross-country skiing.
Parks, rec, and tourism.
Sure.
History, international studies, English. It was a bunch of shit. But I like that about cheese. And one of the things I really liked about being behind a cheese counter is, like I said, you can like find a... you can work with a craft and develop an expertise, but it's not totally singular. You don't get tunnel vision, and you get to learn about a bunch of other things. So what my interest was, where I found my interest line was and leading me was in just learning more about like cheese itself and like diving deep into it. And through working with cheese the previous so odd years, I knew that Jasper Hill was, like, to me, the place to check out to, like, dive head in, you know, like,
talking
at first.
About it for cheese making and cheese maturing.
Well, so you have the barn, so you have liquid milk production, you have turning that liquid milk into cheese in the creamery, and then you have taking that naked cheese without a rind, bringing it across the road, sticking it in a cave and aging it. And I mean, there's no other place that I can think of that has all of those operations on one farm. And if you think about it, like, it opens up so many opportunities to learn if you're so inclined. You know, you can learn how to clean a teat. Yeah. I kind of knew how to clean teats before that, but
that's
you know, and you can learn how to milk a cow. You can learn how to make cheese.
Yeah.
You can learn how to age cheese. There's amazing people in marketing and distribution there. It was just like this epicenter of not only opportunities to learn, but people who were like amped up to learn and excited about it.
Well, do you find yourself surrounded by people who, as you said, had passed through being straight through the retail level and wanted to take that next step and be able to get some more textured environment?
Yeah, and like, you know, there were quite a few people. Zoe Brickley, she came from retail. Vince Razzianelli came from retail. Katrina Razzianelli, Vince's wife, came from retail. So it was, you know, you find in a lot of industries, like, there's natural next steps. And
Being a cheesemonger, we had interviewed him and talking about it. The retail portion, just customers again and again and again, that gets a little repetitive. It gets a little...
I totally dig it, though.
Well, of course.
You know, I love being a cheesemonger because it's this...
Well, yeah, you're not doing counter work now, so it's... You love it. It's,
yeah, I can say that I love it, and nobody can force me to do it. Yeah. No, but I do like it. I didn't leave retail because I was tired of being a cheesemonger.
Well, not that tired, you know? But I mean, this was just a search. I don't think none of us here that are in this building right now could ever say we might be tired of everything.
True, yeah.
Like we might like hate being a cheesemonger sometimes, but we're never tired of being a cheesemonger
anytime. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but no, it's
the, what are you doing now at Jasper Hill? What's your role?
When I first went to Jasper, I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere, to be fair, right? So it's, I grew up in St. Louis, I moved to San Francisco, lived in Oakland, and then moved to D.C., all metropolitan areas. And, I mean, you could say St. Louis is metropolitan.
Vermont is not the middle of nowhere. There's nowhere, the middle of nowhere... Is not
Mongolia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that we have more resources than Mongolia.
Yeah. And you have the internet, right?
In some places. Yeah.
Paved roads, big part of Europe.
In some places, yeah. I mean,
but you're in a nice country setting. Like,
it's a beautiful country setting. Yeah. It's a small town. So it was very different. But so when I went there, I actually did an internship because I wanted to, like, you know, stick my toes in the water before I jumped in. And I didn't want to find myself in a place where I love the work, but I couldn't handle, like, being in a rural setting because it's never somewhere that I truly lived. So I went up there, tested the water, did an internship, left for 6 weeks. I studied charcuterie and butchery on a pig farm in southern France. And because it's another one of my passions.
Sounds really tough.
It was tough.
Did you say it was a struggle for you?
Yeah, it was so hard. It was hard. So I came back, and before I left, I talked to Annie Mateo and proposed a position that I saw could be very valuable, which is has morphed into quality management. And essentially what I do is I work with all the vault supervisors and the cheesemakers and sales and really everybody, and help coordinate cheese care according to the cheese that I see come in. So I check in cheese, look at all the make sheets. So a cheesemaker brings it in and look at the make sheets and monitor compositional information. So fat, salt and moisture.
You're like the expediter in the restaurant.
You're
in the past.
Exactly. So like constantly tweaking the environments to tailor them to making sure that we're doing everything we can to take care of each batch of cheese, because each batch of cheesemakers are awesome and they're super consistent. Milk can change quite a bit. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen.
Farm set operation for the most part up there. I mean, so you're
absolutely,
you have more variables. It's
there's
like,
a lot of variables. Yeah, and if you don't adapt,
and you're consistent until you're not. You know, it's like,
and if you don't adapt your practices and you know, change according to the cheese. You know, I first started, I would ask Mateo questions, and I wanted like prescribed answers.
You can't get that.
He would say,
machines up there are all human beings for the.
Yeah. He would just put his hand, like, cup his hand around his ear, and lean towards the cheese. Listen to the cheese.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, man. Like, give me an answer. But there was no answer. So, I gotta say, I don't do it alone. You know, there's people who know more about the systems than I do. There's people who know more about the cheese than I do.
But you're part of a team, though.
I mean, part of a really strong team. And that involves, like, the cheesemakers, the vault supervisors, everybody in, like, pack and ship, sales. Like, everybody contributes a great deal to the quality. I'm just, like, the dude who gets yelled at if the quality isn't high enough.
It's tough to be sure.
But then you also take all the credit if the quality is good?
I try to, yeah.
You got to get better at that. So the CMI, though, do you feel like you know, I mean, that's an interesting juxtaposition for you. You competed, you won, you dominated, you know, kicked ass.
And then,
boom. Yeah. Now, but here you are again as a sponsor.
Yeah.
I saw you lecturing and the contestants yesterday. I talked to three people yesterday who said that they really enjoyed hearing you talk because you gave people things that they could use.
Sure.
And I think that that's an awesome step for people. And it's because you were maybe a retailer. So you're talking to a bunch of people whose job is to retail cheese.
Yeah.
And you explained to them, you know, how to take care of their stuff.
Yeah, and it's tough to talk to a table or room full of cheesemongers that are obviously at the CMI for a reason because they're professionals and, you know, try and find things that can help them do their job better because obviously they do a kick-ass job at their job already if they're here. But, you know, what I encourage them to do is, like, keep their ears open and their minds open. And even though, you know, a lot of the information that you hear, whether it's like you're at CMI or a fancy food show or a trade show or whatever, there's often redundancies in information. And you can like zone out when you hear somebody talk. It's like, oh, I've heard this before. But there's always, if you listen closely enough, there's always like a nugget of information that you can take away and that can help you do your job better and like help sell, make, age better cheese, whatever, however you find yourself handling cheese, you know? So that's all I said. It wasn't anything special.
Yeah, that's the shit, man. Well, I want to say thanks, Adam, for coming on.
Sure, and, yeah.
You know, it's good to have you here. The last time I saw you, we were jumped in a van and brought together. And
to be fair, you jumped in the van, and then I jumped in the van, and everybody's like, who is this guy? I was like, he's all right. I was like, hey, guys, I'm going with you.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
Matt Spiegler is known for his blog Cheese Notes and for creating some pretty spectacular cheeses like the Finback Wheel. In this clip from the evening of the Cheesemonger Invitational Competition, Matt talks us about his cheesemaking experience and how social media brings the cheese community together. This is Greg Blaze, Andrew Siskind, and Sophie Schlesinger reporting live from the Cheesemonger Invitational for Cutting the Curd. We're here in Long Island City at the Larkin Cold Storage Warehouse. And with us, we're lucky enough to have the cheese blogger extraordinaire and cheesemaker, Matt Spiegler from Cheese Notes and the Finback Cheese. How are you, Matt?
Good, good. Doing well.
What are you thinking of today's CMI?
Well, it's the usual insanity. There were some pretty great, perfect bites. I thought Emily's was pretty good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What did you think? Did you just gorge yourself out there?
Yeah.
I tasted a lot of bites myself,
yeah.
And I thought that some were less about the cheese than the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You know, I think that that's...
There were some pretty over-the-top concoctions.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the craziest thing you ate out there?
Well, it actually tasted pretty good, but there was the one with the key lime pie underneath it, and I forget everything that was going on there.
Cheese was that?
I don't know, key lime pie underneath?
See, that's the thing. Like, you don't know what the cheese was? Then what's going on?
Right.
But seriously, might be a little difficult for folks. I was talking about that with one of the judges. You know, when you're out of your element, sometimes, you know, you get cheeses assigned to you. It's just a little bit different, but I guess that's the fun of competing in general, you know?
It's the one event here. I know they used to do the plate your slate. I don't think they do that anymore, but
no.
It's the one event that I love it because I understand how much appeal it has for attendees, but to me, that's it just has nothing to do with counter work. Like, I've never had to make a perfect bite of cheese for any of the 50,000 people I've cut cheese for.
But yeah. But it is a part of cheesemonger, because if you're working at a cheese counter and you have large amounts of like miscut cheese or you just have little scraps of cheese and you're selling like attendant cheese accompaniments, you've done this like a million times.
Oh,
you're like bored and you hand out
what's
like,
open in the low
dude
boy.
I found this thing of pickles and some mustard and lard and butter, so I put it all together in this bread that we forgot to eat yesterday. It's the best thing I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. Or if you work at a place like Eataly where it's mostly Italian, or Saks could be all American, and people come in and they're like, I want pecorino. Well, we don't have that, but I know you're making this pasta. Like, do this. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to be okay.
So, Matt, along with that being a blogger, a premier cheese blogger, and as Sophie said, probably the only one that's worth
it. The only one you need to read.
Yeah, I don't think you're the man.
There's a lot of great blogs out there, right? That's very strong. I don't know.
Let
me have my opinion.
I agree with you.
the angry calls. The phone is blowing up. Pitchforks outside.
I'm used to it. But you're also making cheese now, correct?
Yes.
So you got up to Vermont to the Woodcock Farms.
Yep, I did a 1 month sort of stage of sorts up at Woodcock Farm.
But you were minding the farm. They were like out of town, and they like lent you the facility, basically, right?
Mark and Gary were out of town.
Okay.
But their daughter Sam was still there.
You had a chaperone on the farm.
Basically, yeah. So she definitely knew, you know, where all the equipment was if I needed to find it, or you know, I mean, she was. She was sort of running the show, and I was helping her out for most of the time. So,
but this isn't your first. Like, you've done a lot of cheese making training. You've done
VIAC. Yep, I did VIAC.
Other stages, I think, maybe.
Yeah, this was the longest one I've done so far.
Okay.
So yeah,
and you also made cheese.
But the great thing that they did is that while I was there, they allowed me to use the vat. To make my own batch. So for that, I did a cheese that I called Finback Wheel, where I basically took the smoked porter from Finback Brewery, which is a new brewery in Ridgewood, Queens, that a couple of my friends started, and washed the wheels with that. And so, you know, made the Finback Wheel. And Ann Saxelby was nice enough to carry it at Saxelby Cheesemongers and distribute it as well.
Yeah, I've heard of that place.
Yeah. Yes, and it was a small batch. It was about
as much as I could get without getting cut off from getting it.
Yeah, I mean, there was 40 wheels total, so people were getting, like, you know, 3 wheels here or 2 wheels there.
But, I'm not going to tell you how many I got.
Oh, yeah.
But it was great. It was great. They were relabeling Humble Pie.
Right,
okay. Bring back for the customers. That was a fantastic cheese did, and I mean, I know you also made cheese in your home, and you actually Elena and
Yos
and
Yoav Perry,
right? You guys
and
are like
Banana,
you guys are like a little gang of urban cheese makers,
cheese tufts, local cheese tufts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great. I mean, you know, it's like bathtub cheese is fantastic. Did you love?
There were no bathtubs involved. I just have to make sure, for the record. Yeah.
Did you like to work on a larger scale like that?
I mean, you know, honestly, like after working in a real vat, going back to you know, home cheese making is a little rough, but yeah.
Cool.
So, you know, right now I'm, you know, looking for other opportunities to do something similar, you know, it's, you know, sort of a pie in the sky idea, but, you know, I have this idea of sort of gypsy cheese making, similar to gypsy brewing.
It's a new idea. I mean, you know, I think it's very unusual for a cheesemaker to be like, oh, yeah, I made a cheese. I made 40 wheels. It's like, it was a one-time thing. I'm not making it again.
Right.
In 6 months, I'll have another cheese that you could buy from me, and it'll be, you know, a similar run, like, you know, very much the way that some gypsy brewers and even smaller craft breweries operate, where, you know, the standard model for cheesemaking is you want to just keep making cheese. You get the process set up. You know, nobody wants to make 10 wheels of cheese and then never make that cheese again.
Right, yeah.
But... you know, like your stuff was crazy in demand. You made 40 wheels of cheese, and I mean, every single bite got consumed by someone who fervently wanted it and had to have it.
And that's kind of something that's been coming up with a couple of people we've talked to this weekend. Like, we were talking to some people at Neil's Yard yesterday, and one of them was like, you know, people should just buy what they're going to sell and just, like, strip all this other shit from their stores. So it's kind of a similar idea, which is really smart because it's, like, I don't know, it's almost like riffing off a CSA model. It's like, just sell what you're going to have and then do that again, and like you'll always sell it. And that's
there needs good. To be like a test. Like you have guest brewers, like you said, you know, they go around. But there's it's would be interesting, I think, to establishing as another gentleman who we all know, Benton Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking a you know, an urban building was
so lagering
cellars to age cheese in Crown Heights in mm-hmm. Brooklyn, which is I've helped build an aging facility in New York before, but it was built above ground in like a new facility. So you're taking that, and within that, I know he has there's other rooms, and I was wondering, mm-hmm. you know, someone like that, you have like a cheese making test kitchen or a place right. where people could go. Mm-hmm.
Like our contract facility, and, basically. Mm-hmm. Like De Pruyf Brewery in Belgium, right. you know, where Dirk Nout, probably mangling his name, a brewing science professor from Germany, you know, has tons and tons of brewers coming there to brew batches of their own beer, to contract recipes with him. I mean, you'll see breweries like places whose names you would recognize, like Mikkeller, for example. Most of his beer is just brewed for him by Dirk at this standardized facility that's ultra flexible. And it creates this, you know, I keep thinking about with the Finback wheel, like I had never had somebody come into the store and be like, did the new cheese from this guy come out yet? Like, oh, is John Smith's new cheese out yet? And you're like, no, it's coming in next week.
Would you say, that's an effect of the work that you've done, mm-hmm. Working with social media, mm-hmm. people know you and they know you as an authority on cheese. So that when you make cheese, they know about it because you reach your blog reaches a lot of people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. make us famous, please.
Well, we're like old time radio. Yeah. Like I could be like smoking butts in here talking to you. But that's awesome. I mean, I wanted to ask you another question related to social media and activism. Mm-hmm. And, I know that. The day we were talking to someone I was talking to you related to you about the FDA's proposed ban on wood boards, mm-hmm. and I would personally was like, I wonder if Matt knows this, and within like 20 minutes you had changed your entire website and like to proffer a change, like, you know, the hashtag save our cheese. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. How's that coming along with your research into that? Is, I mean, it seemed to have died down, or the people I talked to would seem less concerned. Is that a
yeah? I mean, it seems like
concerned?
It's died down for now. But right. I mean, every statement the FDA has even like straight up apologized. They came out with an apology recently, but all of their statements have been very sort of conditional and hedged a little bit. So
like
they've always left room for themselves.
Like the government office.
Are you saying that the federal government won't give a clear answer on a complicated issue?
Exactly.
But shit. I mean, it's good then.
I don't want to live in this country anymore.
Well, it's good that
I mean, they're not going to drop the hammer, I don't think, but they're definitely they're leaving the room for themselves to, you know, sort of bring in incremental change, I think, in the future, potentially. But I don't know.
Well, it's good for our industry that there are folks like you that are watching out for that sort of thing. And no, seriously, you know, it's good that there are folks out there like you that are watching out for that sort of thing, keeping the government in line, man.
Well, I think
making cheese on the side. That's great.
Really, I was just blogging about it. I mean, it's people like, you know, American Cheese Society and Greg O'Neill, and those are the people
course.
Who are really, like, you know,
so modest,
fighting hard, you know, and like doing
for
you
people,
know, the heavy lifting, basically.
For people who don't know, too, do you want to really quick give the URL for the blog just so that people can check it out?
Just cheesenotes.com.
It's on the internet, so you go to the World Wide Web, open your browser,
Safari.
And the address bar up top, type www. Cheese notes.
Oh, you forgot the HTTP.
You're right. Oh, you'll never make it there. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
And we'll be back with more interviews on Cutting the Curd.
A few weeks ago, we had Veronica Pedraza on, representing the new school of artisan cheesemakers in the U.S. In this brief interview on the night of the Cheesemonger Invitational, Veronica talked to us a bit more about her experience as a cheesemaker.
Hi, this is Sophie. I'm here with Andrew Siskin for Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. We're joined by Veronica Pedraza and Gabe Goodlett. Gabe is the director of sales for Sweetgrass Dairy. Veronica is the cheesemaker for Meadowood Farms. And we're going to talk about football.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the World Cup. We're going to talk about the Cheesemonger Invitational. We're going to talk about what it's like. I'm curious to know, I start off with this, what is it like, you came now for fancy food primarily, mm-hmm. right? And it started today.
Yep.
And it'll run Monday and Tuesday.
But I won't be here.
No, but you came down, you're in Cazenovia, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I assume that you were, like, doing dairy work yesterday.
Yesterday, I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I molded some Ledyard, which is a lactic-set curd. I went to the farmer's market for 2 hours, and then I hopped in my car, drove down to New York City to be here for Fancy Food Show.
What's that? I mean, the Fancy Food Show, not the whole show, but, you know, the cheese section is full of people, I feel like, in that same boat. They're like, well, yeah, yesterday, like, I just, like, I stepped in a huge pile of goat shit. But, like, today I'm here. I'm here in New York City. I'm, like, all dressed up. Like, you know, it's...
I'm dressed like my packaging.
You are. That is true.
If you guys want to know what just Veronica's like, shirt looks like, just go buy some Meadowood Farms cheese. Hold it up to your, like, over your shirt in the mirror, and then that's, like, the at-home Veronica costume.
Yeah. Green and white checkerboard.
Yeah. But, like, what's that like to, like, kind of, I mean, do you come down to the city a lot? Or you make cheese, like, pretty much by yourself, right? So you just work all day on the farm forever?
No, I have an assistant now, Julia Lowry, formerly of Cowgirl Creamery. She's holding down the fort. I do have to leave tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the morning so that I can get back in time. She's going to culture and rent it and set the curd, and I'm going to show up just in the nick of time to cut the curd.
Just jump out of the car.
Jump out of the car. I got my outfit picked out already to go to work. Just going to be in that. So, no, it's very difficult to leave the farm.
Yeah.
Anytime. It's never convenient.
Do you
But once I leave, I feel great.
Do you feel like, it's like, you know, I'm sure you sell, you know, some cheese in the Cazenovia area and around there. But I feel like, I mean, your cheese is, like, super primo. Like, I mean, it's some of the nicest stuff that's been at the shops that I've worked, you know, since it came out. And I feel like it has, you know, people kind of covet it down here in the city. You may not be aware of this, but, like, especially...
Well, in the restaurants
The Ledyard is, like, I mean, like, there's...
It's killer.
Yeah, and there's never enough. It's always, like, not that you're not making enough cheese, but it's like, you know, can we get... how much of that can we
do
get?
Do more work.
Yeah.
Basically.
So, but, you know, like...
I make about 240 pieces at a time. Which is about 70 gallons worth of milk.
Yeah, that's like per se for 7 minutes. And then they're like calling on the phone, where's the cheese? But, you know, like you come down, you like go out to dinner to restaurants that are going to serve your cheese on a cheese course. And like a guy with a bow tie is going to come out and cut you a 1 ounce piece of your cheese. And...
Generally, I like to eat things that are not cheese related when I'm... out of my work environment. Last night I went to Sambar with Ann Saxelby and Patrick Martins.
I've heard of those guys. Didn't they used to have a show on this network?
Yeah, I think maybe they have something to do with this radio station.
It's hard to say. So, how many times have you come to the Cheesemonger Invitational?
This is my first time.
What do you think?
I'm a virgin. I feel great. This is wonderful. There's a lot of screaming, which I was forewarned of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Springbrook Farms produces one of the most well-known and decorated of artisan American cheeses, Tarentaise. In the following clip, we hear a bit more about the farm and the cheese.
This is Andrew Siskin. I'm here with Sophie Schlesinger for Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. We are live at the Cheesemonger Invitational in Long Island City here at Larkin Cold Storage. And I'm hanging out with a grip of dudes from Springbrook Farm. And they're all looking like they are really enjoying the CMI. I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
All right. Larry.
Larry Ferrance. I'm a cheesemaker at Springbrook Farm.
Jeremy. I'm a cheesemaker at Springbrook Farm.
Christy. I do sales and marketing for Springbrook Farm.
Gary, I'm a cheesemaker at Springbrook Farm.
Right on. So you guys have come down from Reading, Vermont, right, where the farm is?
Yep.
To New York City.
We're definitely not making cheese right now.
Yeah. To the Gomorrah that is New York City. For the Fancy Food Expo at the Javits Center and for the Cheesemonger Invitational. I've asked a couple other producers from more rural areas in New York City this question. I'll ask you guys, too. What's it like to... I mean, I assume that... Within the last 2 days, all you guys were doing stuff on the farm making cheese. Like, so now you're here in New York City drinking wonderful 6-point beer, one of the great sponsors of the CMI here in Larkin Cold Storage. basically hanging out and eating roasted pig and listening to Adam jump up and down on the stage. What's that experience?
We're experiencing the reverse of what the kids experience when they come up to our farm. It's called culture shock. So there's lots of lights and noises. We like New York. New York's a great market for us.
Very hungry for your cheese. Yeah. Well, you guys,
we don't have radio shows in Vermont. No, yes, we do.
Yeah. They're all country. They're all country.
Now, you guys get, what's the station that comes out of Plainfield where Goddard is?
I don't know that one.
They're a station. But they do good stuff, and they have a couple food shows on. It's like a mixed...
VPR is great.
Yeah, VPR.
They do a lot of coverage of local foods and food systems.
Well, maybe we should go take the show to VPR.
Yeah.
Sure, they're good. Yeah.
So, you guys are known for the two cheeses that you make, primarily. Mm-hmm. One is an Alpine-style cheese called Tarentaise. And the other is a raclette style cheese called, is it Redding or Redding raclette?
It's Redding.
Redding.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a new change, I think.
We want to de-emphasize raclette.
Okay.
Because we want to get away from seasonal use.
Mm-hmm.
We've made arrangements with other farms to buy the milk year round, so we're under pressure to sell, make cheese year round, and sell it year round. And, you know, so. It's very hard for us to just think of it as a seasonal product, and I think it stands up well on a cheese plate.
Exactly. Yeah. The Redding, quite frankly, while it's a good melter, you could use it on burgers or vegetables or in a grilled cheese or macaroni and cheese. It's equally as good on a cheese plate, and so why not use it year-round, just like Tarentaise?
Absolutely. And now I want to ask you guys about the Tarentaise because I know that there's another Tarentaise cheese produced in Vermont by Thistle Hill Creamery.
Yeah.
Now, that one is much less prevalent outside of the state.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, initially there was some sort of coordination between the two operations in terms of making that style of cheese in the region.
Yeah, we still have a relationship with Thistle Hill Farm. And John initiated and licensed Springbrook Farm to make and sell. Tarentaise, which is a name that he owns, but you know, he helped us set the place up, and hey, you know, his cheese is different.
Mm-hmm.
I think partly because of location, maybe some different aspects of the production that make a variation in the cheese.
It's always been, I mean, there are not really other American cheeses really made in that ilk. Where, I mean, you talk about Gruyere or Comté, and they're all very different cheeses made by different people, but it's all, you know, it's all Gruyere. It's just, and in America, it's not like everybody makes, there's no cheese like that yet in the United States where it tastes different from every producer because it's, you know, it's different feed and it's different cows, maybe, and it's a different ethos behind the production, but it's all, oh, but you're still eating this. Except maybe cheddar, and cheddar is such a broad category that it doesn't have the same push. And so the Tarentaise has always been super interesting to me. I mean, in my experience as a monger, I've done, a lot of times I've done the two cheeses side by side for people just to kind of see what that would be like to have, you know, two different expressions of the same sort of concept, the same idea of a type of Alpine cheese.
Yeah, right. And John knew from the start that our cheese was going to be different than his. He said that in public on VPR. I remember he called into a show that was discussing that and said, "Hey, we're going to celebrate the difference. It's going to be different." He knew that. That was before he ever tasted it. So
is it just a two producer thing, or like if somebody else was, you know, close by and said, "You know, I kind of want to also try and make Tarentaise." Do you think that the possibility would be there for that?
Well, that would be really in John's court. You know, that's kind of his thing. We, you know, the Farms for City Kids Foundation has been going for 20 years as a working dairy farm / school. And it is a school, so we bring all the kids up from New York City and Boston and other urban areas. And sometimes we have New Hampshire kids, Vermont kids for day programs. But, you know, so the farm was in place, and they were looking for other options for the milk other than selling it to the commodity market. which gives you a below survival income.
And that's a price that's federally mandated, right?
Apparently.
The federal government says, this is all we're going
to... I've talked to people who have been milking their whole lives, third-generation dairy farmers, and they don't fully understand that system.
The secret formula
that
says that milk is worth... You know, whatever the federal government says.
Next
Basically so we're free, right?
So
you guys didn't do anything to get this out of the cows, right?
Right. So it's tied to some sort of commodity market, and with with cheese production at Springbrook Farm for the Farms for City Kids Foundation, it took milk production out of the commodity market and put it into a different place.
Now, I also recently this year had some cheese that I just, you know, if you guys want to talk a little bit about it, I want to let people know about, that was produced with milk from Springbrook, but by Grafton, the Queen of Quality Cheddar, which was out of this world good. I mean, I sold through, I was able to get 2 wheels from my wholesaler and sold through them in like 3.5 weeks, and that was it. And I called and I was like, oh, do you guys have more of that Queen of Quality? He's like, no, man, that was like a one-time deal. how did that come around, that collaboration?
We thought it was going to be a one-time deal.
Yeah.
But when we had to shut the facility down to do some repairs, and we were looking for a place to sell milk, and
they contacted you recently to ask if we were.
They're asking for more milk
again
because now it's become a.
They like it.
So yeah, I mean they. But Dane wanted to do at Grafton wanted to do a you know specific production with our milk, and apparently. Was successful from what you're saying, but milk is the basis of our cheese. If you don't have good milk, you don't have good cheese, and so that's a tribute to the farm side of our operation. You know, the people making the milk, working with the cows and the herd.
How involved are the kids, the students, with the dairy production?
The dairy production?
Yeah, is there any interaction
there? They work in help milking the cows, but they also come in and they work a little bit in the aging room for us. We let them do the older cheeses, things they can't really mess up, but they, at the same time they learn, and that's really good.
Yeah.
And they understand what is the process and why we do things, you know, a certain way.
They learn some of the chemistry behind the cheese making process.
And then do you guys serve any of the cheese on the farm? Like, do they get to try?
The kids?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
That's part of every time they come in to...
creating a new generation of people who will show up at counters all across the area and say, you know what cheese I really like I had since I was a little kid? I'll have some Springbrook carrot cheese.
Well, and the nice thing, too, is that, you know, they don't know how to, you know, they don't have any, there's no wall there that says, you know, they're going to tell you what they think, in other words. You know? So if they don't like a certain thing about it, they'll tell you. And it's always kind of interesting.
That's true.
You
it's
know?
The most honest tasting
Everybody should have some kids in the QC process.
That's right. Yeah, they'll just go, you know, or they'll love it.
Spit it out.
But they truly have a different appreciation for it after they work in the aging room for half an hour.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for speaking with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And,
you're welcome. Thanks for what you guys do. It's a great show.
Yeah.
Now we're blushing. You know.
We'll see that right under.
So this is Andrew Siskin for Heritage Radio Network with Sophie Schlesinger signing off.
Thank you all for listening to Cutting the Curd here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm off to the airport now to join my cheese colleagues in Sacramento for the annual American Cheese Society Conference. Sure to tune in next week for some highlights of the conference, along with Dr. Diane Stemple. Thanks a lot for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.